recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Monday Mailbag with the doctor of desire himself, Dr. Tom Pritchard. Dr. Tom, how are you?
Paul, I'm doing great. How are you is the question. You just had a busy weekend, I hear.
Oh, man, I'm doing good. As we record this, it's the Wednesday after just getting back from Top Guy weekend. I still think I'm catching up on sleep, but it was all worth it, Dr. Tom. We had an absolute blast with all the top guys, all the stage shows, all the meet and greets. I had a few people asking me, where's Dr. Tom? One of them, Amy Vaughn, you know, one of your biggest fans.
Sure.
But, man, we had a really great time. Like I said, from Jeff Jarrett to Eric Bischoff, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, all the gang, Kurt Angle, all out there. And just an absolute blast. I love putting faces with, you know, with names. And, you know, people write into this show constantly. Got to meet them all, man. And that's what it's all about, is that connection.
Awesome. 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 Sounds like a great weekend.
Yeah, yep, and it was so funny because a lot of people were like, man, really enjoy listening to Dr. Tom, but man, I got to remember to put a question in. I said, yeah, you do, because that'd that's be what nice. Makes this thing work, okay? So, awesome. Yeah, good times, but man, we got for this show and our show towards the end of the month, so this show will drop on the 12th, and our next show will drop on the 26th. We got a top 10. We got a top 10 list, so we're going to do a top 10 list of questions for this time around and then the follow-up. But listen, guys, I know you're telling me left and right. I got to remember. Okay, yeah, well, remember, we need you. We love hearing stories from Dr. Tom, so make sure that under these show drops, you go ahead and submit your questions on anything. I know a lot of it are wrestling-related, but just wanting to get to know Dr. Tom in general, you know, as a person, as a human, because, you know, he's one of us too. And so just
I wouldn't be so sure of that. You haven't checked my DNA in a while, pal. Especially after midnight. So how about that?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, Dr. Tom, you ready to jump in this week?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right, buddy. Let's start out with, I know he's your brother's personal financial advisor, Lenny Bakken. I mean, he put Lenny Bakken on the map early on and something to wrestle with. He was one of his main sponsors, and he helped sponsor a lot of stuff for us the last few weeks, whether it's StarCast or Top Guy Weekend. But he's going to kick us off this week, and he says, Dr. Tom, since you are so focused on the wrestling and psychology side of the business, did you ever feel frustrated in the 80s and early 90s when it seemed the look and muscled up physique was more important than the work rate or ability?
I don't know if it was frustration as much as it was the realization that things had changed. When I was coming up, you had guys like Jose Lothario, Wahoo McDaniel, Johnny Valentine, and even Jack Briscoe, who weren't necessarily muscle heads, but the only guy out there who might have been considered the muscle head would be like the Tony Atlas or the superstar Billy Graham, and they were so far and few between. It was just the realization that now things were changing and the gym had become an even more important part of what the business was becoming. But I don't think I ever felt the frustration. It had always been a top guy in a big man's world. And, yeah. And it was just one of those things that hit everybody in the face that the world is about to turn again. And it was the Hulk Hogan's and guys like that really were getting all the attention. And if you wanted that, you better fall in line.
Yeah, I mean, man, once Hogan hit, Hulkamania, between the gym and, unfortunately, in the 80s, the needles and everything else, the pressure was on for some of these guys. And
I mean, the pressure was on for everybody to try and do better if you really wanted to. And, you know, I there were moments and there were spurts when the gym was a regular routine, and I got into it when other people would go to the gym too, but it was just another part of the changing and evolution of the business. And I didn't get frustrated. It was just the realization that this is what it'd come to for that moment. And hopefully it would move on. And it did.
It did. And you know, you had those the tag team, you had intercontinental type mid card, you know, all those type of belts and things like that. And that was, and we also know that just when we, you think about the WWF, but the territory were thriving. And, you know, and guys that were not Hogan like were still succeeding very much well. Ric Flair, I mean, come on, look what the Nature Boy was doing, right?
Well, Rick, yeah, and Rick had a decent body when he was champion. He always worked out. He always looked the part. He looked like somebody. But there was a time when it was work rate that came first, and the body and all the aesthetics came second. But it's always been a body business. You know, you're going out there basically in your underwear, so you want to look as good as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that's me and wrestling never would work. All right, Lenny Bakken, he comes back and he says, looking back, what was the biggest mistake you ever made in your career that you would take back if you could?
Oh, getting married the first time.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, Jim Barnett told me, get a divorce, man. And I said, that was the best piece of advice I ever should have got, and then I should have followed it. So,
Jim Barnett was like a marriage counselor. Jim Ross was telling us about Jim Barnett's counseling.
You know, he knew he knew the business. He knew what you needed to do to succeed. And I made huge mistakes back then, and I should have listened. Live and learn.
Well, outside of the marriage, was there a wrestling decision that you wish you like?
Yeah, I do. I was supposed to go to Portland, Oregon when I first started out. And I was supposed to begin in January of 1980. And I had a few matches early in 79. But then my first full-time territory was going to be Portland, Oregon for Don Owen. Well, Gary Hart came to me a week before I'm supposed to leave and says, you're going to go to California first. And I said, but I'm booked in Portland. He says, yeah, but you go to LA first, stay for 2 weeks, and you go to Portland. And when I got there, when I got to Los Angeles, Chavo Guerrero was a booker, and business was horrible. And they needed talent to be in there. They just needed young, they needed anybody to come in and work. And so, when I asked Chavo about leaving for Oregon, he goes, oh, no, you're supposed to stay here. And I said, well, is somebody going to call and let Mr. Owen know? He said, yeah, we'll take care of that. And they never did. So I wasn't savvy enough to understand that that was my responsibility to call somebody, but Chavo told me he would take care of it. And lo and behold, I was he never did. Nice. So that was one of those things I regret. Just I enjoyed L.A., but I really think I would have got, looking back on things, a better education and a better outlook starting out, because Los Angeles was, what a city back then.
You mentioned Gary Hart, and a lot of us, at least me, I remember him in World Class. Then I also remember him coming in Muda Funk and WCW, NWA. Any good, let's pick one, any one good Gary Hart story that you may have for the audience?
I remember watching Gary Hart as a kid, too. And Gary, I think, could be misunderstood by a lot of people, but I took Gary to the airport many times, and talked to him many times through the years. But one of the memories that stands in my head most is when he and Don Jardine, as the Spoiler, were in Houston, and coming back from the ring was getting mobbed. He had the United States title, the American Championship, heavy belt, and he started swinging it over his head, and the people just scattered. That's mostly what I remember about Gary Hart. The other times, Gary was kind of a mellow, easygoing guy, you know. But he's one of those guys that will slit your throat if you cross him.
I could see that. Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. That makes sense. All right. Yeah. Michael McClanahan, Money Mike is up next, and he says, "What are some of the non-financial metrics Dr. Tom uses to measure the success of the wrestling school? Does he look at how many students get signed to major promotions? Is it a comparison of class size growth Or are there other factors?
I think, again, anybody who gets booked after training with us, that's certainly an asset to have and look at and say, well, when you come, you do get opportunities outside. We've had two people signed with WWE, a couple, I want to say, I know for sure one in the NWA, but we've had a couple of people go for AEW and all over the country. So that's certainly one thing non-financial we look at. And the classes, I'm trying to figure out after 4 years, this is our fourth year. Usually the winter class is the less populated one. Gotcha. And the last class that's coming up, our fall class, has been the one where we've had the most. I've had as many as 22 students at one time, and that's 5 days a week. So when anybody leaves our door and then, of course, comes back and trains with us over and over, that's something we look at. That's something I'm certainly proud of, that they can get booked in most places around Tennessee. And even if they go home, they find a local promotion, and some people are doing very, very well there too.
Now, Dr. Tom, you said it, that you've had the school for what, 4 years now?
Yeah. Going okay. on. This was before.
So last 2-3 years, have you noticed, because of the AEW, the growth of NWA and et cetera, that it's directly impacted your business as well as the amount of students that you're starting to see come into your school?
Well, we get a lot of people apply, but you know, it's obviously the ones who really are dedicated and mean what they say.
Sure.
Show up. You know, I mean, I've had as many as I believe it was close to 90 in one session apply, and 12 show up. So, you know, you get a lot of inquiries, but as far as dedicating yourself to 5 days a week,
that's a different story.
So yeah, with people going out there, they say, I want to see if I have what it takes to go to a major company, and we want to see if they have that too.
Yeah. I just figured, it would kind of be a ripple effect as far as just the explosion of the business the last few years, mainstream otherwise. You know, if you felt that, if you're seeing that in your school in terms of overall headcount and interest,
etc. Well, we see interest. Like I said, you can fill out an application and send it to us, but once again, you know,
yeah.
I live in Wyoming, I want to come to Knoxville. Okay. But then we have a kid this session who came all the way from France to train.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
That is cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Drew Landry. And he says, do you teach battle royal / Royal Rumble style matches? What is the trick to those matches? Is it timing? And is the best Rumble 92 when Ric Flair won it? So let's start with number one. Do you ever teach those types of concepts, the battle royals, Royal Rumble?
We do, because we have battle royals for our graduation. Usually, and you have to get in there. And the battle royals are just a matter of going out there and figuring out who you want to put over. If you have a bigger guy, certainly the most obvious thing is to gang up on him, get him out first. But yeah, the battle royal is about timing. It's about pacing, and making it entertaining as you can. And we do go over that. We teach that. And, As far as the 92 Rumble, okay, I'll go with it. Yeah, Rick
went in it.
Yeah, sure.
I gotta imagine that, and maybe I'm wrong. Is a Royal Rumble? I mean, there's got to be a lot of communication in the ring as far as.
Well, a Royal Rumble, yes, but a battle royal is different. I mean, the Rumble where you come every 90 seconds or every minute, something like that. Well, yeah, that's certainly a whole different animal than just a regular battle royal, but. And we don't necessarily do Royal Rumbles in JPWA, but
it's about a royal.
It's about a royal, yeah. The timing is, and it's just who you want to put together and what do you think the best ending or finish should be.
Got it. All right. Thank you so much, Drew. Next up, Ben Ledbetter. And he says, Dr. Tom, how difficult is it to book a wrestling promotion And where's the line drawn between booker and talent, buddy? That's a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that. How difficult is it to book a wrestling promotion, and where's the line between booker and talent?
Just my experience being in a meeting with bookers, writers, and people who delegate. It's one of those things where you must have the authority and the respect of the talent that you're booking and you're telling what to do. It used to be a lot more intricate because this is a relationship business. And if someone doesn't want to work with someone else, and it's going to cause problems, not only in the ring, but outside the ring too. Those are elements that bookers back then had to look at as well. The outside forces that colored the inside forces, if you will, colored the way the people were working with each other. Then you had to make it work if it was a money drawing deal. But if this guy's wife was mad at this guy's wife for something or at this guy for something else, it was so ridiculously petty, and it's a headache I never wanted to have, never did have. I was never a booker, but I was sitting around in the writers' meetings and listening to some of this stuff, which that was an extension of the bookers now, creative they call it. It used to be just one guy, and sure. And yeah, that one guy was usually talent too, and he was a main event spot. He was in that main event spot because he knew if he could rely on himself. Eric Embry, when he booked Memphis, got the guys he wanted to be around, got his crew, and brought them in and knew they were going to get along. And that's how it usually worked. You brought in guys that you could rely on, knew you could count on them to make the towns and do what they were asked to do. These days, it's a lot different.
So listen, we're behind the paywall. We have, this only goes to our top VIP listeners. And obviously, you know, they asked this question. There's a lot going on right now with what we've all just saw and heard, with the AEW. What are your thoughts just as an outside guy, having been in the business for a very long time? What are your thoughts on kind of what's all going down there with kind of all the behind the scenes stuff that now has been put on blast? All of us know exactly what's happening. What are your thoughts on it?
I think it's a bad look for everybody. Everybody thought it was this great place to be. But what they have found is when you let the inmates run the asylum, this is what happens. And when you have lack of respect and people come in, and it's one of those things, you give respect, you earn respect, you'll get respect. But when you really haven't accomplished as much as some of these other guys have who come in, and then you don't ask for their advice, you don't want to hear what they have to say. A guy like Arn Anderson, a guy like Jerry Lynn, a guy like Dean Malenko, who are there, you don't want to listen, or JR even, then how do you expect to be looked at? Youth is wasted on the young. That's a Steve Regal quote. You don't know how stupid you are until you get older and you go, God, that was stupid.
Right.
So it's one of those things I think that everybody involved, it should have been handled privately, I think.
Yes.
That's the problem, number one. It should have been nipped in the bud if there were some issues. That's number two. And I think everyone has to be on the same page and understand, look, if you're going to do it like this, do it within the context of drawing money and trying to make it better for everyone. If you have some real issues, let's get it out on the table. But there has to be a compromise. There has to be something. And the compromise is you do what the boss says, actually. There is no compromise. I just think it's a bad look for everybody, and to bring it out and air it in public is, once it's out there, you can't take it back. And then they will always look at the company differently.
Yeah, differently. It's a black guy, man.
It really is because everybody's talking about how fun it is there, and the owner dresses up like Orange Cassidy on Halloween, and oh my gosh, and, what? Yeah. You know, I mean, things like that just
that might be part of the problem.
I think it's a huge part. I really do. Yeah. I think it's a huge part of the problem because it does start from the top. And where has, I don't know, Tony Khan, never talked to him. Don't have a clue about his personality, what he's like, anything like that. But just watching some of that press conference with Punk and Tony sitting next to him, there was no, what the word I'm looking for. He didn't strike me as a boss who commanded respect.
It was more of a buddy.
It was a buddy. Yeah. And you can't do that.
You got to have that line of demarcation. That would have not been Vince ever.
Never would you see that. No way. Vince dresses up like Vince on Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, Vince is Vince.
Yeah.
There was no one to turn to. So the boys now are saying, well, look, I'm not going to take your disrespect and I'm not going to be sit here to talk to you like that.
And they took matters into their own hands and it went around.
Yeah. So, and then people see the discourse and it just doesn't fly.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's very disappointing because I've been a fan of AEW, the alternative. I love competition. I felt like WWE needed it for so long, and it's been fun to watch some guys that I haven't gotten to watch in a very long time do their thing. Yes, even CM Punk, because he is a lightning rod in the ring when he's at the top of his game. But, man, never been so disappointed in the unprofessionalism for how you handle that situation. You know, even as a guy that works in a shoot job, as they say, and no one would ever get away with that with your real boss at real work and doing that stuff. Come on, man.
Well, that's what I mean. You have been allowed, the inmates have been allowed to walk free and open the doors and come on out and do what you want. Happen.
No way.
Yeah. That's why it's imploding, I think.
Yeah, well, there's still a lot of solid heads there, as you mentioned, the guys, Regal, JR, Shivani, so many others that you mentioned as well. And you just hope, hey, was this the wake-up call that we needed to get ourselves back in order? Even the senior talent there, you think about a guy like Chris Jericho, who you worked with in Smoky Mountain in the early days, and the Bryan Danielsons and John Moxley, these guys have worked for Vince for many years and know how this should work. So,
well, and that's the thing. They have worked for a company that has done things right as far as the business and steering things this way instead of letting it go off the rails. So they would know, but then you have guys like, let's say, the Young Bucks or an Adam Page or a Kenny Omega who have only worked in certain places. So they don't know the structure. They don't know the mindset. They don't understand anything but what they've been through. Not their fault. It's just that I say this all the time, less is more. And they're one of these people who say, a couple of these people who say, no, more is more.
Yeah,
but then you really don't understand the concept.
And then using social media to vent things. It's like, what are we doing?
That's where it goes off the rails.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks for, I just curious about that, guys. This is our opportunity to pick the brain of a man who's been in the business and seen so much. And man, just, this is something we really haven't seen kind of happen in wrestling to this level. At least not that I can remember, Dr. Tom. So,
well, listen, I agree with you in the sense that WWE needs competition. The guys need a place to go where they can not only get reps and learn more about professional wrestling, but it's good to keep everybody on their toes and have somebody nipping at your heels or overtaking you, and then there was competition.
And it keeps you busy because that means more wrestling, more wrestlers need to be trained, right?
By all means.
Yeah.
Yep. And we're always here, by the way.
That's right. Yep. Drew Landry is up next in a fantasy booking match. How well do you think Charlotte Flair and Chyna would draw?
I think they draw pretty well, actually. Yeah. I think it'd be a hell of a match to watch. And hell I think both ladies would be fantastic. I know I'd like to see it.
Listen, Charlotte's one of those that could be just as physical. You know, with China, I mean, China's obviously, there's no one going to touch her strength and power, but if there's anybody that would want to tackle that, Dr. Tom, you got to think it'd be Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, and it would be amazing to see China and Charlotte match up just the visual in the ring. And I'm sure they could come up with a great match, a great ending, and have all the drama and all the ingredients you need to create interest in seeing the match. And I think it would be a hell of a draw. I think it'd be a great thing if it could happen at a WrestleMania, but we'll never know.
Yeah. Good fantasy booking there. Amy Vaughn, our buddy, is up next. Hey, Dr. Tom and Paul. Dr. Tom, what is your favorite match that you got to see in Houston growing up?
You know, I don't think we've hit on this too much, but every week, Paul Bosch put on a hell of a show, and any match with a Funk in it, whether it was Terry Funk, Dory Funk, Senior or Junior, was a great match. But Wahoo McDaniel and the Great Malenko had an incredible angle, incredible feud, and they had chain matches. They had loser leave town matches, and Malenko would come back as Mr. Houston. And one time, Wahoo chopped Malenko. His dentures went out of his mouth. He stomped the teeth in the middle of the ring, you know, and everybody thought that was one of the craziest things ever. Then come to learn and find out they did it in Florida. They did it everywhere Malenko went. He had dentures, and it would hit him in the mouth, and he would fly out and stomp the dentures in the mat. It was it was great because that was a shock. That was something we hadn't seen before. So I saw so many matches. I don't know that I have a favorite. You got Valentine and Wahoo. You got, Terry Funk and Harley Race. Mm. We saw all the top guys come through Houston. Yeah. All the top guys came through Houston. I had a bunch of matches I enjoyed.
For those in the younger audience not familiar with the Great Malenko, that was Boris Malenko, also the father of the Man of a Thousand Holds, Dean Malenko.
Yeah, talented guy. Yep. Talented guy.
All right, Devin Dowling is up next. Got to meet him and see him this past weekend. What was Dr. Tom's opinion on the Fiend character and Bray Wyatt himself?
Knowing Bray Wyatt like I do, knowing Wyndham Rotunda like I do, I thought it was awesome. And the reason is that's an extension of who he really is. It really is. Wyndham Rotunda is Bray Wyatt, and Bray Wyatt is the Fiend. And if you can have fun pulling that off and being that persona and not straying too far from who you really are, that's awesome. But Wyndham and Bray, as one and the same, he has all these tattoos on him. He has all these ideas in his head. He is one of those guys that doesn't just stay in one lane. He goes off. He ventures off, and it's interesting to hear him talk about various things and various topics. And I always thought, and I still think, he's a talented guy. So I like the Fiend. I like Bray Wyatt. I like the whole deal, man.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see him come back.
I just was listening to an interview with Triple H, and he was asked about Bray Wyatt. And he said, man, what a creative, creative guy. He was like, he's a tornado. And he's like, now my job was always to harness that tornado because, man, he'd be, well, what about this? And what about that? And you could just tell his thoughts were everywhere. And he was like, the harnessing of him was always critical, but man, what a creative, creative guy. So
creative. And he's lived life. I mean, he's lived a lot of life, and it just went to show that you take your experiences and you put them into a story, and not just anybody could tell that story. Not just anybody could be Bray Wyatt or the Fiend. You had to be that guy, and that's who he is, and that's who he was.
All right, good stuff. Listen, Amy Vaughn's up next, and I love this question. I think I told you the last time we recorded that I was about to record an episode with Jim Ross on Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and we did that, and my goodness, it was you and your partner, Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey, against Lance Storm and Chris Jericho. It's the match that Jericho just bled all over everything in that arena.
Yeah.
So here we go. She says, I was listening to Paul and JR recently discussing a Smoky Mountain Wrestling event in 1994. The Heavenly Bodies were on the card. JR was talking about the show, about how Smoky Mountain would swap talent with the WWF back then. You were a part of some of those swaps. My question for you, what was it like? How long did a swap usually last? Did you have any pushback from guys already in the WWF who didn't want to, you know, potentially have to, you know, have people taking their spots? Did any of the guys try to take liberties with you in the ring? I say that because I'm sure you could convince them that wasn't a good idea. As always, love this podcast.
Right, right. No. Nobody took liberties. Nobody even tried to. The Steiners were total pros. Everybody there were total pros. They knew that wasn't what this is, and that wasn't what we were there for. We started out with it was going to be one match against the Steiners at SummerSlam. The real deal was WWE wanted Jim Cornette. That's an American spokesman for Yokozuna. They knew he wouldn't come without his team. So they gave us a match, which turned into another match at Survivor Series and turned into, I think, something else and some more TVs. And then we got hired in January. So we were the first wave to go in, and everything was fine, actually. I knew what was happening. If we were setting the world on fire and drawing these enormous gates, it would be one thing. But it was during the time period when things were really changing in the business, and we knew it. And we were just looking for the opportunity to get an opportunity, and that's what we got. So no, it was fine, and I enjoyed it.
You know, one thing that stuck out to me is we watched that together with Jim Ross. There was the talent swap going on. This was also the time period when Brian Lee was doing the fake Undertaker.
Undertaker, yeah.
But you had the Thrill Seekers, and you had Jericho and Lance Storm. They looked so good together against you guys in the ring. How in the world were they never swapped or brought into WWF at this time?
At that time, I think because they were still young and I don't think there was a spot necessarily for them, because shortly after we came in and started doing our stuff, Smoky Mountain went under. So, and Jericho and Lance, I don't remember where they went. If they went
maybe
back
Japan, to Canada, maybe?
Maybe Japan.
Because it was right before. He wouldn't have been going to WCW quite yet.
Okay, yeah. Well, it was one of those things that, they would have been called if Smoky Mountain would have been stayed open, but there was no spot for them yet. I mean, there was no place for them to really go. I think both of those guys kind of knew if you don't go, or if you go somewhere and you don't have a spot, well, then you're just exactly there. So
you could just tell they were both supremely talented.
No doubt already.
Yeah.
No doubt. Really talented.
I tell you what, another thing that stuck out from that card, that was when Jim Cornette had the gangsters down there doing their thing. That, what you talk about, holy shit, fire
well,
down there, man.
Yeah, because New Jack.
Woo!
New Jack, yeah, Mustafa and D'Lo.
Yeah.
They got real heat. I mean,
oh, real heat.
You're in the heart of the South, and New Jack wasn't afraid.
No.
Nobody was afraid. And that can be the dangerous part, you know, having no fear.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were actually, Jack was a lot of fun to be around.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Yeah. There you go. All right, final question for this week's mailbag. Dr. Tom, if you could have had that famous one more match, who would it be against and why?
Oh, man. Well, if we're just talking fantasy, whatever, booking, if Terry Funk was available to do it, by God, why not? I worked with Dory, but I haven't yet. Yet to work with Terry, so I don't think that's going to happen now, obviously. Yeah. But, I don't know. If I could have one more match, it'd have to be Terry Funk.
Just because he was always the legend for you in your mind?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why. The only reason. I mean, Dory just sent me his book, and I gave him a hero report years ago I did in high school, and he put it in the book and said one of his favorite matches was the 50 Years of Funk. I got to wrestle Jimmy, and I wrestled Dory and Dick Murdoch in Amarillo. So it was kind of cool to watch them growing up and then get in the business and get to know them the way I did and realize all the stuff they did back then was so clandestine and super secret spy stuff and couldn't let anybody know. And then to get to know them and ask them about some of this stuff was pretty cool. And hearing about the things they do, you know, on the road and stuff like that.
Well, you know what I think is pretty cool is that guys like you, guys like Ric Flair, others that were very familiar with the Funks and the Briscoes, you know, that maybe my generation, we came along during the Horseman era from then on, we're not as familiar. I mean, we saw Terry Funk, you know, back in, you know, late 80s,
hardcore
90s, but not when it was in the 70s when he was legendary in your mind. So I appreciate the fact that you guys are always still carrying the flag because it makes us want to go back and do our homework a little bit and find out more about the legend of Terry.
Well, here's the thing. You know, why is it that most football players know Joe Namath, Lyle Alzado, Dick Buckus, the old school guys, but yet, when it comes to professional wrestling, you say you want to do it so much, you don't know who Terry Funk was or Harley Race or some of these guys who were iconic or Lou Thesz. Not that if for anything else, for history's sake.
Yeah.
And Buddy Rogers, Pat O'Connor, nobody knows these guys. Anyway, I say nobody, but the majority of guys
know the names. That's it.
Know the name. Yeah. Well, With YouTube, you can look at some of this stuff. And there are some old matches out there. And again, it goes back. This is one of the things, not just in wrestling, but in a lot of areas in life. Respect. Not just general respect or manners have been lost out there with a lot of people. So that's where we're just losing a lot of our civility, and professional wrestling gave people an escape, and so they did it. Everybody knew it was a work back then too. It was no secret, but it was kept tighter, closer to the vest. And not everybody just came out and admitted it. You didn't have the internet, you didn't have cameras, didn't have phones. So you had to actually go out and perform. You had to actually go out and get people interested in coming back week after week or buying a ticket. That's how you made your living. And learning how to call things on the fly. The only way to do that is to do it. The only way to learn how to do it with feeling is to get in the ring in front of people, get in the ring with a veteran, get in the ring with a guy who's watched it his whole life or was living it like a Terry Funk and Dory Funk Jr. Those are the guys who made it real to fans who wanted to believe. There was a saying, you know, for those who believe, no explanations needed. And for those who don't, no explanation will do. Okay, you don't have to believe, but I guarantee you, you could watch a Terry Funk match and you could watch a Dick Murdoch or a Ted DiBiase, and they would convince you. They were that good. They would convince people that there was an element of doubt. They may not have thought it was all on the up and up, but there was an element of doubt. And one of the things people used to say back in the 60s and 70s was, well, the rest of the card might be fake, but when they fight for that world championship, you know, that's real. World champion's real. Well, I don't know how you made that comparison, but that was what some people would say. So, that's what's missing today. I think a lot of the authenticity, but it's because you're not wrestling 6-7 nights a week. You're not in your car traveling. You're not on flight traveling. What you're doing is you have a, as you said earlier, a shoot job. Well, back then that this was their shoot
this was
job.
This was it.
This was the job.
This was our life.
So this is how you lived. And when you go into a convenience store or stopped on the road, wherever it may be, you didn't have to go in a full blown, you know, turn it up to 10, but you knew people might know you. So you had some air of mystery about you. You weren't like everybody else. And Terry Funk, Dory Funk, DiBiase especially, I rode with him a few times. He had a presence about him, and that's what made wrestlers special back then. They had this presence. They never let it loose and let people see behind the persona. If they were in public, they were that person in public. And if you met them as a fan in public, then there was a certain amount of gravitas they carried with them. It was there, and you knew it.
Yeah, so, they were used Ted DiBiase in the ring and out of the ring at all.
Yes.
Time.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes, because that was his job.
Well, Dr. Tom, listen, this has been another fun edition of the Mailbag. Appreciate it. We'll be back again in 2 weeks for another one with another top 10 to go towards you with. But how's the school going as we wrap up this week?
The school is going great. We have, after this week, we have two more left, and the guys have done fantastic, been working their ass off all summer in the heat in Knoxville, and we're looking forward to our fall class starting in October, and that will be our last class of 2022. So,
can you believe we're already at the end of the year getting there? It's unbelievable.
I'm telling you. Yeah, every year I say it, it's going to be over before I know it, and it's happening.
Well, listen, you can if you're interested in being a part of Dr. Tom's wrestling class, you can check that out too. Dr. Tom, throw out that web address for them to check out the school real quick.
Check out jpwrestlingacademy.com. It has all the information you need. Just click on that training page, and you can also get my book, A Wrestling Curriculum.
I found myself down that web hold. I was waiting for, you know, this morning we were to jump on and JPWA Wrestling Academy, and I ended up finding the merchandise.
There you go. It's not that hard. You just hit training on the left-hand side, I believe. And you can get all the information. Fill out an application, send it to us, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, you want to click the more button at the very top right. When you see more, you'll see then merchandise. It's going to shoot you over to the Pro Wrestling Tee store, and you're going to see at least four JPWA shirts, including the one that I have on. And so you can check those out. And while you're over there, you can also search Tom Pritchard. When you search Tom Pritchard, you're going to find some themed Dr. Tom shirts as well. I saw one that I liked this morning that I would like to order. It's called Pritchard MD. I think that's the perfect shirt to wear while I host this show. So check it out. Get you one and support our buddy here, Dr. Tom Pritchard, who takes the time out of his busy schedule to sit here and answer questions. Dr. Tom, this has been another great time this week.
Awesome, Paul. Anytime I get to spend with you is a great time.
Well, listen, I love it too. Dr. Tom, we're going to be back in 2 weeks. Listen, guys, for this show to keep working, we need you. So throw those questions under the posts, and we are going to get through every single one of them. This round of questions that you drop, we'll get to in our October shows. But we appreciate all your support. We appreciate the doctor of desire, Dr. Tom Pritchard. On behalf of Dr. Tom, this is Paul Bromwell. We'll see you again here in 2 weeks on the Monday Mailbag with Dr. Tom Pritchard.